Coach Christian Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eve, editor-in-chief of the Journal, coming to you today with something that's brand new. A number of people in a variety of contexts have suggested they would enjoy audio versions of the papers that we published, and wanting nothing more than to give you good value, we decided to give it a try. This podcast is one of a few produced by asking intrepid authors to read their article verbatim for your listening pleasure. We'll judge the value of this pilot by download rate, podcast ratings, and any tweets you care to send promoting the initiative. If you'd like to give feedback, please email me at kevin.eva@ubc.ca. And if you like this initiative, we'll continue doing it as long as we can find authors who are willing to engage.
This State of the Science paper is entitled Change is Never Easy: How Management Theories Can Help Operationalize Change in Medical Education. It's authored by myself, Lisi Gordon, and Jennifer A. Cleland. Part 1, Introduction. Standard ways of thinking about organisational change and development suggest that change happens when policymakers, leaders and managers change the vision, structure or procedures of an organisation and then persuade others to implement their new strategy. However, such top-down, driven by the top management change efforts often fail to meet their intended purposes and instead result in disturbance, resistance to change from individuals and groups, and unintended consequences. This is no different in medical education. Major changes have occurred in medical education over the last few decades and have included a shift from apprenticeship models to teaching and learning and towards a competency and outcomes-based medical education, and the use of simulation training for the mastery of technical skills. Despite these notable examples, other attempts at change have been less successful. There are plenty of examples in medical education that illustrate how the changing of different curricular ingredients, selection processes, and medical school space, and the introduction of new learning tools did not work as planned. Nor are the actual processes of change straightforward. Attempts to reform curricula in medical education have been previously described as challenging and disruptive, and often manifest as an exercise that results in the repetition of sameness and no actual reform of the process. So why is this the case? We believe this is because medical education and training are highly complex and are characterised by multiple relationships and connections among people, contexts and systems. These interconnections generate their own impacts on the wider systems and the systems in turn impact on individuals and groups. For example, the context or prevailing environment is the underlying frame in which change is implemented, change occurs and outcomes emerge. Without a deep and broad understanding of these factors, we risk falling prey to solutionism, the theme of this special issue, by treating complex problems as if they have simple answers. However, what works in one place may not work in another. Individuals and teams may straddle multiple overlapping and interconnected contexts and therefore be influenced by and will have influence on these contexts. Moreover, the outcomes or goals of medical education are not static. They shift on the basis of global and national societal drivers of healthcare and medical education. A very pertinent example being the recent significant changes in delivery of medical education in response to the global COVID-19 pandemic. The notion of complexity in medical education is not new and mirrors thinking about health systems. Many different theories of complexity exist and are used in multiple, not always unproblematic ways in medical education research. Moreover, although the discourse of complexity is present in medical education, it does not seem privileged in the everyday sense. Undesirable or unanticipated consequences of change are often attributed to failures to acknowledge complexity and the impact of this complexity. However, if medical education is neither simple nor stable and is highly contextualised, ways of perceiving multiple connections and complexity are fundamental when seeking to describe, understand and address concerns and questions related to change. Only by foregrounding this complexity can we create approaches to change that are both fit for purpose and future focused. taking the position that complexity is more than a general worldview at a high level of abstraction and needs to be refined, adapted and applied in different ways for different research questions. In this article, we present several contemporary organisational theories that can be used to move beyond the metaphor to understand and operationalise change within medical education. These theories provide a way of making sense of the complexity of change creatively, without assuming that change is straightforward or controllable. By doing so, they prepare those involved with change in medical education to embrace obstacles, challenges, and the unexpected, and to see these as inherent to the process of change. Furthermore, we believe there is particular value in embracing theories that cross-cut different levels of analysis and allow us to zoom in at micro levels, as well as zoom out and connect what's happening at the individual level to what happens at the wider institutional and even national or international level, the macro level. Only by doing so can we understand how macro level understandings of change will connect to and influence interactions at the levels of the individual and the team, and conversely, how individuals and teams will have agency to influence and affect at the level of organisations and systems. These multi-level understandings can help explain why organisational changes succeed, fail, or have unintended consequences, and will help those involved in change to anticipate and manage uncertainty associated with a change process. We acknowledge we're not the first to apply a complexity lens to medical education. However, in response to earlier calls in literature to consider the greater use of organisational theory in medical education research, we add to knowledge in the field by explicitly connecting theoretical perspectives from organisation studies to the complexity of change in medical education, with the ultimate aim of encouraging different ways of thinking in order to open new avenues for thought and exploration. The theories we present forthwith are those of institutional logics, paradox theory, and complexity leadership theory. We chose these three theories because they all foreground the connection of everyday interaction to wider organisation and system level activity, particularly during times of change. It's important to acknowledge our positionality at this point. A physiotherapist by background, Lisi Gordon has worked in the fields of medical education and management studies since 2008. She has drawn on education and management theories grounded in complexity to study healthcare leadership, professional identities and doctors' transitions. An occupational and clinical psychology by background, Jennifer Cleland worked in the field of organisational change before moving into medical education in 2000. She has drawn on complexity and change theories when enacting various leadership roles and has also brought management theory into her research to help understand issues, including those in which there is an obvious interface between macro and micro level factors. Part 2, institutional logics. Institutional logics was introduced by Friedland and Alford, who argued that attention to society-level institutional orders, such as national culture and politics, and society-level norms was crucial to the understanding of organisational, group and individual behaviour. Logics are societal ways of ordering reality, or expectations, norms, beliefs and rules that shape goals, behaviours and practices at an organisational, professional or individual level. More recently, institutional logics has been defined as socially constructed historical patterns of cultural symbols and material practices, including assumptions, values and beliefs, by which individuals and organisations provide meaning to their daily activity, organise time and space, and reproduce their lives and experiences. These logics or influences are often taken for granted and control activity through established norms. For example, in Western healthcare, medical professional logics, traditionally embedded in expert knowledge and autonomous practice, has historically governed how healthcare systems have been viewed and the processes of decision-making enacted. However, increasing demand for healthcare provision and reductions in the ability or inclination of governments to fund healthcare in its entirety have led to rises in both managerialism and the influence of market and corporate logics. Multiple logics exist in the same place. For example, managerialism versus professionalism, and they vie for dominance. The precise nature of the relationship between different logics is much discussed and debated, but generally speaking, different logics can coexist in the same space, called logic segmenting, although the influence of these different logics on actors will vary, and they will be enacted and expanded differentially by different actors. For example, medical education is typically influenced by the logics inherent to both healthcare and education, which may or may not complement one another. Differences between logics and their respective influences can lead to change in logic meanings and shift from one dominant logic to another. To illustrate how institutional logics can be used as an explanatory lens, we turn to a specific example. Trish Ray and her colleagues have written extensively in the organisational literature about drawing on institutional logics to understand change in healthcare organisations. An example of their work involved the use of institutional logics to explore change in a group of family physicians' collective professional role identity over time. At the beginning of the study, physicians were labelled as autonomous experts, and with the ideal logics type, professional logics very strong, whereas state, corporate and market logics were low. By the end of the study, physicians described their role identity as that of the head of a team, deferring responsibility for many tasks that had previously been the sole remit of physicians. This study demonstrates how using an institutional logic perspective can allow researchers to illustrate how micro-level workplace interactions affect widespread professional change. Part 3, applying institutional logics in medical education research. Medical education research that uses institutional logics should focus on how individuals, teams and organisations draw meaning from and enact different logics in practice, and the interplay and potential push-pull tension between those different logics. One position paper published in 2010 considered the overarching plural logics of science and care in medical education, and how different contextual factors, for example, the rise of managed care, the entry to medicine of greater numbers of women, were associated with one or other logic, and how these fluctuated over time and created dynamic tensions about how to educate future doctors. We identified only two papers using institutional logics as a framework in empirical work. Both were produced by the same team, who are looking specifically at how health professions education scholarship units shared values and practices despite regional, national and international contextual differences. Using interview and documentary analyses, the authors mapped out three dominant logics across HPESUs from Canada, the USA, Australia and New Zealand. These were the logics of A, financial accountability, B, a cohesive educational continuum and C, academic research, service and teaching. Although they were common logics across all HPESUs, the authors identified the different logics held different degrees of dominance in each context, reflecting wider national systems. The relative power of each logic influenced the nature of the activities, for example, the balance of time spent on service or scholarship, and outputs valued by each unit. They concluded that the understandings of these logics gave insight into why individual units are structured and function in particular ways. Looking at the wider literature, research using an institutional logics perspective has illustrated an inherent struggle between healthcare managerial logics and medical logics. In medical education, similar tensions exist between, for example, service and education provision. An institutional logics perspective may help to highlight the multiple and competing logics inherent in service and education and to foreground the underlying causes of these tensions at multiple levels. An example of segmenting in medical education relates to the multiple logics associated with professional standards. Education standards set by professional associations such as the UK's General Medical Council or the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency can and do compete with the logics of workplace standards that have been set by individual healthcare organisations. Similarly, education standards set by regulators whose remit covers schools, medical schools, can be in tension with local university regulations relating to assessment and progression. Institutional logics can be used as a framework to explore how these logics coexist, potentially providing new perspectives on, for instance, meanings of professionalism and professional behaviours. Longitudinal work in this field might reveal the agency of individuals and groups to influence both organisational and professional logics. Part 4, Paradox Theory. Paradox theory refers to a group of theories that focus on the conflicting but interrelated goals and competing demands within an organisation that coexist and persist over time. Considered ubiquitous, these simultaneous inconsistent states may be between innovation and efficiency, collaboration and competition, or new and old. For example, organisational change involving the creation of project teams for planning and enacting change, for example, curriculum reform, can create role ambiguity. For example, is the reform or business as usual the priority? A different example, that of an employee versus organisation tension, could be the use of practices such as bonuses, standard in universities in some countries, which can lead to rivalry and conflict among colleagues and have adverse effects on well-being. These examples illustrate how paradoxes are both inherent in systems and socially constructed as a result of different stakeholders, diverse goals and positions. The paradox perspective views tensions within organisations as latent until times of change or disruption, at which point they become visible. If paradoxes are not attended to, ambivalence, conflict, chaos and collapse ensue. However, finding a balanced approach is key. Paradoxical tensions are unresolvable by either or approaches, because stressing one tension exacerbates the need for the other, perhaps providing short-term relief, but ultimately raising defences and impeding the learning of new ways to work. To illustrate both this and how paradox theory can be used as an explanatory lens, we turn to a specific example. Cleland et al. Used paradox theory to explore how those working in a general surgery department in a university teaching hospital experienced, perceived and responded to service training tensions. They found many tensions apparent in the data, with managers, surgeons and resident trainees in conflict because they held differing perspectives on the same issue of balancing service and training. This adversely impacted on relationships across and within these groups and led to individuals prioritising their own goals. Efforts to work through these tensions led to improved relationships and communication, but no new ways of working were identified, and hence the balance between education and training didn't shift in any real sense within hospital structures. Paradox theory provides a framework for considering opposing viewpoints and incompatible positions in the social context of an organisation and for raising awareness of their coexistence, i.e. making latent tensions visible. The act of doing so affirms opposing tensions are equally valid and can be means of encouraging constructive both and responses. Put simply, thinking with a paradox theory mindset allows people to confront tensions, scrutinise inherent contradictions, and find creative ways to meet competing demands. Specific types of paradox operate and interact across micro, meso, and macro levels, and different approaches to managing paradoxical tensions have been proposed. These are performing, organising, belonging, and learning, each of which has different implications in terms of providing relief from attention and potential for progress. Recent studies have also taken a process-based perspective to indicate how paradoxes and coping with them evolve over time and how this process is embedded in organisation structure. Part 5. Applying paradox theory in medical education research. Researchers have applied a paradox theory-based lens to phenomena as varied as identity, innovation, governance and leadership, as well as part-whole tensions and systemic contradictions within organisations. These are all relevant areas within medical education research. As an example of the last, consider the tensions between a medical school and its host university. The pressures on the overarching organisations may be different from those in the medical school, which is typically subject to additional external regulation. How do the actors and structures in the medical school respond to organising tensions like empowerment and control and belonging tensions in terms of balancing being part of a collective system, the university, with the wider reference group of medical schools in their context? Paradox theory is a particularly useful approach to the examination of change processes. We referred to some common change processes in medical education earlier, but we draw here on a more general example. Universities regularly review internal structures and restructure to improve their efficiency and effectiveness, redistribute power and drive innovation. During restructuring, new goals are established, roles altered, and relationships between actors redefined. Tensions occur between the old and the new goals, roles and relationships at different levels. Paradoxes of performing arise at the micro level as individuals struggle to respond to the conflicting demands embodied within their own roles and within the roles of others with whom they share joint tasks. Paradoxes of belonging occur at the meso level as different groups embody different values, beliefs and identities, shaking up group memberships and loyalties. The final paradox is that of learning as restructuring is usually accompanied by new procedures and frames of reference. Paradox theory can be used to make invisible tensions at different levels visible, to examine responses and encourage adjusting responses, and to study how a tension at one level may have effects on another level. Management studies indicate that context is relevant to the management of organisational paradoxes. Given this, comparative studies could look at how medical schools and individuals working in medical schools respond to the same paradoxes. For example, shifting from the apprenticeship model of learning to competency-based medical education, and how these responses are related to external, economic, sociocultural and legal, etc., and internal resources, processes and values, etc. factors. Part 6, Complexity Leadership Theory. Complexity leadership theory is a relatively new approach which regards leadership as a collective process that arises from interactions among individuals, groups and contexts, rather than from a discrete role allocated to an individual or an individual's capacities. The focus of CLT is the dynamic, changing, interactive and temporal, informal interactive patterns that exist in and among organisational systems. A focus that illustrates CLT's foundations in complexity theory's notion of interconnectivity. In this framework, leadership is fundamentally a system phenomenon, or the product of interactions and tensions, which can be both human and non-human, that generate learning and new outcomes. As such, leadership, and with it, change, can occur anywhere within a system when individuals interact over time to produce adaptive outcomes. Ulbein and colleagues propose three broad functions of leadership within a CLT perspective. First, operational leadership is grounded in traditional hierarchies within an organisation, which focus on function, task, order, regulation and prescribed organisational outcomes. An important role of operational leadership is to translate and embed ideas and innovation into the structures of the organisation. Second is entrepreneurial leadership, which tends to operate at a local level, but also at multiple levels within organisations and systems and in interconnected ways. Entrepreneurial leadership refers to the adaptation, innovation and learning or emergence that occur in response to tensions and new challenges. It is often seen as informal and based on interactions rather than an act of power or authority. Finally, enabling leadership works to both facilitate the emergence and adaptation that occur through entrepreneurial leadership and to manage the connections within the organisation. In other words, enabling leadership will create an environment in which innovation and adaptation can occur whilst ensuring there is flow of new knowledge throughout an organisational structure to other systems and administrative structures. Complexity leadership provides a framework for the exploration of change at the micro, meso and macro levels. Research using CLT could focus on the interaction between agents, for example, the intersection between operational and enabling leadership, because through this we can connect and develop understanding of the means by which change occurs at local and organisational levels. It may also help us explain why change may or may not be successful. For example, CLT principles have been used to track changes in behaviours and services in public health nursing. The authors argued that leadership within the system depended on several factors, including interaction and involvement of members in reflective practices, planning and decision making, the number of cross-organisation relationships in each local system, the ability to communicate change and innovation throughout an organisation, and the level of boundary spanning that occurred whereby group members would link with others to build relationships and bridges for the flow of information. In other words, enabling leadership. Part 7, applying complexity leadership theory in medical education research. As we have previously explained, to date and to our knowledge, there are no examples of the use of CLT as an explanatory lens for the analysis of change in medical education. A contemporary example of a context in which CLT might be applied refers to exploring and explaining the processes involved in implementing interprofessional education. A shift to interprofessional practices and the corresponding obligation placed on educational institutions to implement IPE are seen as vital to the meeting of global workforce challenges, highly complex healthcare needs and increasingly constrained budgets. A recent meta-synthesis exploring student education, educator and service user perspectives on interprofessional placements as part of IPE found issues pertaining to limited understanding of learning processes, that implementation relied on individuals and therefore introduced potential issues with sustainability, and a lack of understanding around the purpose of placements and their roles within them. By exploring the networks and connections among different levels within the system using CLT, it may be possible to identify and track how the implementation of IPE placements achieved through operational leadership is being adapted for suitability at a local level. These adaptations may be achieved through entrepreneurial leadership, perhaps most importantly, and to address the concerns highlighted in this meta-synthesis, it may be pertinent to identify, track and explore the enablement of leadership by asking how enabling leadership facilitates connections among operational and local levels with regard to the understanding and reasoning behind IPE placements. One could also ask how enabling leadership facilitates the sustainability of innovations rather than relying on individuals at a local level through connections between local systems and wider organisations. Alternatively, it could be suggested through CLT that identifying a lack of presence of enabling leadership may cause disconnect between multiple levels within an organisation and ultimately cause change, in this instance, the implementation of IPE placements, to fail. Locating or not locating enabling leadership within a medical education system and possibly developing enabling leadership capabilities within the system could be a focus for interventional study. Part 8, considering theory critically. As with all theories, we must acknowledge that there will be limitations to the explanatory power of institutional logics, paradox theory, and complexity leadership theory. Each theory or group of theories is at a different stage in its evolution. Paradox theory and related empirical work have progressed and diversified since the theory was first proposed some 35 years ago, and institutional logics has become well established in organisational studies since its inception 30 years ago. However, research into complexity leadership theory is in very early stages across all disciplines, and more study is needed to establish the value of complexity leadership theory as a critical explanatory lens for seeing leadership as an emergent organisational phenomenon. Reflecting this, complexity leadership theory is, to the best of our knowledge, novel to medical education and medical education research. Indeed, institutional logics and paradox theory have been used, but only in isolated studies, and further research is required to establish the use of these theories within our field. Additionally, institutional logics has been critiqued for its ethnocentric nature because it's developed to explore westernised organisations, the focus of which pertains to one way of seeing things. It is therefore essential that contexts, local and national, are considered when using this perspective. Institutional logics can also be selective in nature. Why choose to explore certain logics and not others, and to focus on ideal types of logics? Researcher reflexivity is essential here in order to identify and explain what is and what is not explored. Finally, institutional logics has been criticised for its tautological approach, i.e. the use of a multiplicity of terms that often mean the same thing. It is therefore essential that researchers maintain clarity of explanation when reporting the use of this lens of analysis. The strength of paradox theory is that it provides a way for considering opposing viewpoints and incompatible positions, and so can be used to make latent tensions visible. However, it does not provide a framework to assist with addressing paradox. Those interested in implementing change must look elsewhere in the literature for guidance on how to. In short, recognising the paradox is not sufficient in itself to lead to change. Secondly, research has predominantly examined organisational level approaches to the managing of paradoxical tensions. There is a need to look more closely at individual and team levels of analysis to advance paradox theory. Linked to this, there is increasing interest in how some people approach competing demands with a mindset that allows them to manage complexity and be open to ambiguity, whereas others may or may not have the knowledge, capacity, for example, resources and time, social networks or mindset to seek out new and novel ways of working and may prefer existing ways of doing things. Further research on how collective paradoxical frames develop from the individual's frames is also called for in the literature. Thirdly, paradox leadership is dominated by case study methodology, and studies often focus on one change within an organisation. Future research using paradox theory may benefit from embracing more study designs and methodological approaches. Finally, there is also a paucity of research in reporting on instances in which a paradox theory approach to tensions has negative consequences, although emerging evidence suggests that some conditions are appropriate for paradoxical leadership and mindsets, whereas others are not. Other studies suggest that seeing tension as paradoxical can increase complexity and uncertainty, which may be detrimental in terms of action or commitment to a specific option. Some may argue that complexity leadership theory has similarities to other leadership theories, such as those of distributed leadership and transformational leadership. However, it is arguable that complexity leadership theory brings opportunities to draw on more critical views of leadership, which rely on a layer of emergence and construction through interaction. Thus, roles, for example, who the leaders and followers are, shift away from the assumption of reasonably stable roles and lines of leadership. Therefore, complexity leadership theory becomes a tool for understanding current and possible status and why change may or may not work, rather than a frame for setting up stable symptoms for leadership. Critics suggest that complexity leadership theory continues to rely on notions of leader-centric power to manage complexity rather than on complexity leadership. Further research using complexity leadership theory and arguably developing the theory is essential to advance this conversation. Finally, and more generally, the borrowing of theory from other disciplines is not new in medical education, but as with any theory borrowing, it's critical to carefully consider the theory and check that its assumptions are congruent with the specific research question. The theories presented in this paper acknowledge the interactions between the macro and the micro, or between systems and people. If this is not your area of interest, then these theories may not be appropriate. Secondly, all theory illuminates certain aspects of data. Different theories will emphasise different factors and outcomes and neglect other aspects. For example, someone working from a different perspective may have considered how the sociological theories of fields and social network analysis could reconcile the micro-macro divide. This would be perfectly valid and would add to the body of knowledge and understanding in a different way from the theories we suggest. Ultimately, theory choice, and hence what is illuminated, will be guided not just by the research question and data, but by one's own training, knowledge and interests. We urge healthcare professions researchers to read widely and be open to, but scholarly in terms of their critical assessment of new theories from different fields. Part 9, conclusion. The primary aim of this paper is to introduce organisational theories that have rarely been used in medical education research, but that have been seem to have applicability given their focus on the interconnections between people and systems and how the systems in turn impact on individuals and groups. As Finkelstein put it, I understand that as researchers we need to simplify very complex processes to study them carefully, but what are we left with when we remove the messiness, the back and forth and the reality? We hope that by drawing the attention of readers to the potential of these theories, we can unlock some of the complexity of medical education and open new avenues of research. There are no conflicts of interest in this paper, and both authors contributed to the conception of this work and to the drafting and subsequent revisions of this paper. Both authors approved the final manuscript for submission.